White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 594.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family, and we are so glad to have you. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, the season, the football season is over, and the early signing day is over. Basketball season is underway, so we've got a few odds and ends to catch up on this week. A few things to talk about.
Yeah, a plethora of things to talk about.
Nothing super huge and pressing, but just a number of things to kind of touch base on, and I like it that way. Low pressure. Low pressure.
And lots of different topics to pontificate upon. So this is in our wheelhouse here.
And that's what we can do, absolutely. By the way, we are talking about doing this here newfangled Twitter talking thing. What is that?
Twitter Spaces.
Yeah.
The plan is we're going to do one during the bowl game, maybe during halftime, right before halftime started. It's basically an live audio chat, on Twitter through the Twitter app. I think there's a way we can record it and then it can release it as a podcast after. So we'll try and do that. But the plan is to do it. And we'll see how it goes. So if you have Twitter and you're interested in jumping on and like at the end of the first half of the bowl game, which is, a week from after you're listening to this probably, and listening to us talk about the bowl game as it happens or at halftime and talk about the first half and stuff and get some instant reaction, then jump on and let us know what you think.
Complain about how they're playing or not playing, all that.
Or the referees or the stadium in Birmingham or whatever.
If it works on Twitter on the computer, then recording it is no problem because I have my computer, completely set up to record all audio that comes through it. That's how we're able to get the soundboard, you and me, all at the same time. If it's only on the phone app, then we'll have to see if they'll record it, if they have a way to record it. I don't know.
Again,
technology.
This is uncharted territory. I know the Shutdown Fullcast does a Twitter Spaces and records it, but I don't know if they're doing something else to make it happen.
I know what we need to talk about, though, to bring in the big audience. We can talk about the Florida State coaching change. Isn't that what brings in the big numbers, is the Florida State coaching thing?
The Oregon.
Oh, Oregon. Okay. I was thinking it was the Oregon. Okay. So there we go. I don't think Auburn coaching business is going to.
It was Florida State trying to fire fans venting about firing their coach after their number one recruit in the country decommitted on signing day
and
went to one AA school. So.
Deion Sanders.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the Deion Sanders, Nick Saban television commercials coming on over and over on my television is a circle of hell.
Yeah.
It may not be the ninth circle, but it's one of them.
I mean, we've never talked about this, but again, I witnessed the Florida State Auburn Sugar Bowl in person, and I hated Deion after that. And then, of course, he had to play for my two hometown teams, the Falcons and the Braves.
And he said he even insulted Bo Jackson along the way.
I know he did. Anyhow, all right. You went to a basketball game in person. You got to see the 2021-2022 Auburn Tigers men's basketball team in person play the St. Louis Billikens. And so what's the first-hand report, Van?
Couple of things. All right, so not only did I get to see them up close, they walked right in front of me a foot and a half away through the hotel lobby because I staked out a really good position and was able to not film them because they were – excuse me, I'm sorry, it's a cop – they were supposed to come down at like 5:30, and at about 6:15, they were still only like a couple of people coming. It was like they're coming down the elevator, and they're only coming down like two at a time or something. And so I'd turn on my phone, get my video camera thing up, and get it ready, and then I'd walk by. And then I'd turn it back off again because I had to wait a long time. So it didn't quite go the way I wanted, but Amy got some good pictures, and we tweeted them out. Bruce came out and talked to the crowd, and it could be 20,000 people or two people. He's going to give you a good show. So Bruce kind of just appeared out of the parking deck or something into the middle of us. We didn't even see him coming. And he said, this team is improving. He's talking about St. Louis. He says, we're going to really need you guys tonight to be loud and support. He says, this St. Louis team is improving. They're playing really well. They pose some problems for us, some challenges for us. And he said, don't take this one for granted. You know, we really need to get this win, and we're going to really, he has some, really good stuff to say. And he's very, very motivational. You always want to run through a brick wall after you hear him say anything, But I did talk to the lady who, arranged the Tiger Walk inside the hotel. And so I got like about 2 minutes here, which I just thought was interesting that you guys want to hear before we talk about the game itself and everything else. So let me see. All right, so we are at the Westin in St. Louis, where the Auburn basketball team is about to come down. And we're going to greet them here for a little Tiger Walk inside the hotel. And I'm here with the St. Louis Auburn Club. You are?
Linda Ragsdale.
Well, Linda, and what all goes into organizing something like this?
This was actually really easy. I didn't have to do much. I have a good relationship with a lot of people at the Alumni Association back at Auburn. And I just said, hey, we want to do something. What's the best approach? What would you like us to do? And the biggest thing is Tiger Walk. So the team, they all take care of where it's going to be. We just take care of putting the word out and making sure that our local people know what time and where it's at.
So is this the first time that the St. Louis Auburn Club has done this for the Auburn team, or has it been here before? I don't know.
Yes and no. So we have done some things at Mizzou for Auburn Mizzou games.
Right. Which, I was at that one, yeah, which, 2 years ago.
So we're looking forward to Auburn coming back to Missouri just next month, which is pretty exciting for us as the St. Louis Auburn Club to see our local teams twice in, one season. So we've done it for basketball games out there before on a limited basis. And then a couple years ago, the SEC championship basketball tournament was here.
Yep. That was not good, though.
Unfortunately, it turned south real fast, unfortunately. But, we all still had fun. And, and I've been blessed enough to develop friendship with some of the coaches over the years, too, through Auburn playing Mizzou, and with Mizzou now being in the SEC.
Yeah, I'm still trying to convince my 13-year-old to go to that game, because right now this is the only one we're going to get to go to, and she's like, I don't want to go to Missouri. So what does it mean for Auburn basketball to be what it is now compared to those years when we were not? I mean, what does it mean to you as Auburn fan?
You know what? It doesn't matter if our team is great or if our team is bad. It's all Auburn. I tell people here in Missouri all the time, that always want to say Alabama's better. And like, no, Alabama fans like Alabama football. Auburn fans love all things Auburn.
Doesn't matter what we're doing.
Doesn't matter what sport.
That's right.
Doesn't matter at all. We just love Auburn. And obviously it is really exciting that Auburn basketball has been doing so well in the last several years, and we're grateful to have a wonderful coach like Bruce Pearl.
Oh, so exciting. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much.
We appreciate you.
It. All right.
War Eagle.
War Eagle. All right. That was really good. Linda was super nice, and she had a nice little crowd all gathered in there, and we were in the midst of them. And one of the you had from the front desk of the hotel, you went around the elevator block, and you came right into like the people on both sides all the way around to the door, like an L shape to the doors to go out to the buses. So in other words, if you were checking out of the hotel and then walking past the elevators, you had to walk down a gauntlet of Auburn fans on both sides of you, several deep, all the way around. And there was this young couple, and they were talking to each other as they came along there. And they got about halfway along and looked up, and they just froze. And they were just looking up at all the Auburn people looking back at them, and they just kind of blinked and had this look of shock on their faces, and they turned around and ran back the other way. They had inadvertently wandered into Tiger Walk, and it was pretty funny.
So, I would have just rolled with it and high-fived everybody.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, the maintenance guy, every time he'd come through, he would, like, wave at both sides, and we would all cheer him. So he got a lot of that. Yeah, he was going with it. So, yeah, that game, man, I mean, they have a nice little arena. Somebody pointed out, somebody said it's only a couple of years older than Auburn Arena, but it looks a lot older, and it's okay. I got to say, their food selection is abysmal. They have the worst. I mean, I was hoping they'd have, like, you know, barbecue sandwiches or not decent nachos or something. They have movie theater food, John, and I don't mean like the nice mark. I don't mean like the food you'd get at a movie theater where the seats are assigned and they recline. I mean like the food you'd get at the movie theater where the floor is sticky and the seats are falling apart. It was very bad. So that was disappointing. But what we went there for was to watch Auburn play basketball and win, and we got that. It was a fantastic comeback. It was
so
a game.
How worried were you when we were down 10 late in the game?
All right. At the lowest point, we were down 13. They went on that run, and in the middle of it, Bruce had the guys come over, and he huddled them up tight and started yelling, and I saw him say, wake up, really loud. We went back out there and got even further down, and then he got the technical, okay? Mm-hmm. After the technical, it was about 6 minutes left, and that's when we put the brakes on. When we got the technical and they made those shots, and we were down 13, that was the only point that I was kind of like, man, I hate that we're going to have to see a loss. But I never gave up completely. I just thought it's not looking good. But I was doing the math, like, what do we need to do? We need a 3 to get it back to 10 and then get a stop and get another shot. And once we get into single digits, we still, you know, still got 4 or 5 minutes to go. And that's exactly what we did, right? We made a couple of big shots. We got a lot of good defensive stops. We wore them down. You know, they were dominating us in the paint in the first half and in the early second half. But in like the last 10 minutes of the game, I think they only got 2 points in the paint. The whole last 10 minutes, we absolutely put the lock. That defense is the difference. Because we know they've got players that can create a shot. But when they crank up that defense, they got shot clock violations multiple times on St. Louis. They gave them all kind of fits trying to inbound the ball, trying to pass. Yeah. The only thing they never could stop was St. Louis kept getting – I'm calling St. Louis. Everybody here calls him SLU, but I don't know if everybody knows that. The only thing they weren't stopping was – SLU just kept getting offensive rebounds and second and third chance shots, and that was driving me crazy.
They killed us on the glass on both ends, but especially getting offensive boards. And that's something Auburn's going to have to tighten up on.
Yeah,
we cannot get pushed around by a team like that, or we're going to have real problems. So that was a big kind of red flag in this game. Here's two things that I saw in the game. One is that it got real frantic. Right at that point where they were ahead, Auburn was kind of reeling.
Yes.
And the game was frantic, and everybody was kind of running around like dogs chasing their tail, like, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And Auburn couldn't settle down and do something.
They were pressing. They were trying even harder, but it was making them make even more mistakes. They were fouling a lot.
They were trying to go too fast, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so I think, but there was a moment, and it was after the technical, and Bruce purposely didn't call a timeout at that point. He was like, y'all figure it out. I'm over here clapping. You got this, right? And that's when they started doing that high screen with Wendell Green and the center. And they did that again and again. They've been the same play like 10 times in a row down the stretch of that game where Wendell Green had the ball at the top. Kessler would come out and screen, but sometimes he would just start to act like he would do a screen, and the two defenders would like brace for it, and then he would just like take two steps toward the basket, and it was an easy layup.
Oh yeah.
And then Jabari Smith was over in the corner waiting for a 3-point shot, and then he had Katie Johnson on the other wing waiting to do something with the ball if it came to him, and they just ran that again and again and again. And Bruce said afterwards that was a play they ran the same game against St. Louis 2 years ago, whenever we played them in Birmingham. They ran the same play with like Javon McCormick and McLemore or whatever, and it worked against them then. And he was like, I feel kind of dumb for waiting until then to run it. But same kind of thing that worked against them then, they ran in this game. And then the only thing I saw is that, I mean, again, it was a very physical game. It was a lot of hand checking and a lot of pushing around and stuff in that game. And I think that kind of messed with Auburn. Like, I think St. Louis kind of came in and the refs called it very loose, and St. Louis was kind of pushing Auburn around and grabbing the ball away from him and stuff. And so I think that's the other thing where Auburn's going to have to be ready for games, especially on the road, for games like that. So that's why this game was so valuable, because it showed them, like, in a road game, this is what it might be like.
Oh, with 2 minutes or so to go in the first half, Slew had like 2 fouls, and yet they were calling everything on us. But I got, you know, the thing about the rebounds was, we're talking about, they were beating us on the rebounds. It wasn't like we were down there mixed in with them, fighting them, and they were just like pushing us around and getting the rebounds. It seemed like almost every time they'd get a rebound, it was because they were the only ones in position to get it. I didn't even know where our guys were.
They got a lot of long rebounds.
They got a lot of rebounds where the shot would come back about 10 feet away, and they'd have somebody completely alone that just caught it and took off. The only times that it was that they were beating us was under the, it was right under the goal, like on a layup or something that didn't go in. They were fighting and scrapping and getting the offensive boards, and almost every time they would get the putback. Whereas we went on a long stretch where we couldn't even get a putback under the goal to go in. It kept bouncing back out,
That's right.
But the referees were kind of ridiculous. That was just a strange, strange way to call a game. And it was very frustrating there. And the only thing that saved us, if you're talking about it, is that we, like you said, we figured out an offensive attack that worked about the same time we kind of settled down on defense. And a big part of that, I hate to say, during Slew's run, we had Zepp Jasper in for a lot of it. And he was working hard, but it wasn't working. And they,
it wasn't his day.
No, they took him out, put Wendell Green in for like the last 5 minutes of the game, and that was a lot of the difference.
Wendell Green really was the one that settled the team down and took him out of that frantic mode that I was talking about. It was like, okay, I got this, we got this, just go out here, let's play basketball the way we're supposed to, and not run around like chickens with their heads cut
off. I think Bruce needs to just sit down with Zepp and say, here's a few things just to think about, you know, to work on.
Well, the other thing is, I think it's a great place that Auburn is in a place where we have depth, right? We have 3 good guards, right? We got Wendell, we got Katie, we got Zepp. Mm-hmm. We could rotate them around and you know, bring one of them off. One of them's always going to be coming off the bench, and it's okay, you know, because they're going to be an asset off the bench.
The other thing that was really interesting to me was this is in the arena up on the big scoreboard, they had a live field goal percentage for both teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I was watching it. And then like in the first 10 minutes of the game, I was tweeting this, in the first 10 minutes of the game, our field goal percentage was lower than our 3-point percentage. It was like 19, 20, 21%. And that was when we were losing early. Then we kind of took the lead before halftime. Our shooting percentage got higher than theirs. And then the second half, it kept going back and forth. And it was really interesting. I don't know if this is like, I don't know basketball well enough to know this is an iron rule of basketball or it's just kind of a coincidence. Whoever's shot percentage was higher was usually winning through the entire game. Through the entire game, whoever had the higher shot percentage, and ours was close to 50 by the end of the game.
Yeah. A lot of that's indication of good defense, right? When the other team's shot percentage is going down, you're playing good defense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, theirs went down, ours went up because we figured something out on offense and defense. So, and Alan Flanagan, the word was, we thought we might see him. There was some talk that he might have played, but word was, Bruce said, if this had been like a NCAA tournament game or SEC tournament game, he could have played. Yeah. So they're just being super cautious with him. I think he'll probably get a few minutes coming up in the next game, and we'll see.
Yeah, we play Murray State on Wednesday.
The Racers.
The Races, and then we play a week from Wednesday. We open SEC play with LSU, who's a great defensive team. We play them in Auburn. So I think Flanagan will play some minutes against Murray State, probably won't start, and then he'll play more against LSU. But again, we don't need him to be at peak right now. We need him to be at peak at late January or February is the grind of the SEC season. And again, we saw a lot of Weaver Berman the last couple of weeks, and he's exciting and he's fun and he's fun to cheer for and stuff. But those are all minutes that should be Flanagan, and a lot of the minutes, you know, some of the other guys are playing too. Right. He's going to take those. So,
can I say a word about Auburn basketball Twitter and the memes?
Go, and then I have one thing about the advanced stats. Go.
All right, just simply that it's become a highlight of this year. I kind of wish we'd had it at this level during the Final Four year. It was there, but not like this. just all these memes. As soon as the game is over, when we win, Auburn basketball Twitter, which is a subset of Auburn Twitter, but a very loud, vocal, visible one, they start bombarding the rival school's official account with all of their hilarious meme images.
Yeah, they wait at the other team's official Twitter account, like in this case, the St. Louis University official Twitter account, will tweet out the final score graphic or whatever, and that's the one that Auburn fans reply to, is you just lost to, you know, Bruce Pearl and his bad boys or whatever. So
bad boy board. Yeah. Bruce Pear gave you his L, that kind of stuff. And I mean, what's funny is that people will post a screenshot of, it's like the other school posted the final score and it'll say 23 seconds ago and it'll say 270 replies. That's how fast. That's how fast they
jump. People
on
got
it.
Them teed up. The stuff tweeted. So it is really fun. If you've never seen that, you should go back and look at some point, because some of them are really funny.
They got the tweet and thumb ready.
And they made one of you.
They made one of me. I am an Auburn basketball meme. I was so excited. I was so excited. It was the greatest moment of my life, John.
It's, you know what, winning the book awards and stuff, and then like having a child, Auburn basketball meme.
Auburn basketball meme is clear number one, man. It's a picture of me. It's a picture of me the day I left the hospital after my operation in 2019, and I looked scraggly and got a couple of days of beard. And it says, "You just, what does it say? You just lost to the Auburn podcaster extraordinaire Van Plexco was in attendance to witness your loss," or something like that.
And you had laser beams, you know, your eyes.
I asked him, where's the laser beams? And they came back and put that in. But yeah, that was absolutely awesome. So, but the reason that I thought of that and wanted to mention it was because I saw a new really good one that said, it had Berman, and it said, you just lost to the Bermanator who pays tuition to beat your team, or something like that. He pays tuition to give you this loss. That was so good.
Very good.
That was so
very
good. All right. Any other hoop stuff, or you got some?
Yeah. What I want to say is just on the advanced stats for the basketball team at this point of the season, you know, one more game. If we had an SEC to play, Auburn has played a tough non-conference schedule. I mean, people don't appreciate it. I think it's the second toughest in the SEC heading into SEC play. And currently, Auburn is number 9 in the NCAA net rankings, which are their official rankings that are going to be part of the thing, and number 11 in KenPom. So that should give you a view about where Auburn is. And I think it's clear if you watch this team, we know Flanagan's not back. This team isn't played as well as they can play. They're not, you know, they still have some real obvious weaknesses and issues we've talked about, but, you know, it's exciting, and it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And the SEC is super tough. We're not going to roll through the SEC, you know, and only win one or two games. I mean, only lose one or two games. But there's a lot of good teams, and it's going to be really fun. But this team has the chance to be in every game. So
yeah, this is going to be quite a year. I'm going to be heartbroken and disappointed if they don't at least give us a good show. I mean, I want them to win all kind of stuff.
I want to win championships.
But we'll see. We'll see. You know, gotta be realistic, because like you said, there's a lot of big competition this year. Hey, we have. I apologize. Hold on a second.
All right, I'm gonna keep going. Vance Coffin. We have football news.
Yeah, I've still got the COVID long COVID. We have an offensive coordinator.
Austin Davis is the offensive coordinator, the former Seattle Seahawks quarterback coach and former Southern Miss quarterback who played against Auburn in 2008. And is, you know, then played a couple years in the NFL, and then, you know, it was a quarterback coach to the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson. And I'm excited about it. I think what this means is he's going to focus on quarterback development. He is the offensive coordinator by title, so he's going to be doing that kind of organization and bring it together. But I think Harsin's going to call plays. They haven't said that officially, but that's the theory. And I think the offense is going to be kind of an Austin Davis, Harsin, and then the receivers coach, you know, Brain Trust, the three, who was Harsin's OC in Boise. I think the three of them together kind of work it out, and Harsin call the plays. But I like the idea of having someone who is solely dedicated to quarterback development and who could really come in and sell that to future recruits and stuff and help the quarterbacks on the roster and the quarterbacks coming in get better. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I'm just, I had to go look. Would you like to know Austin Davis's statistics against Auburn?
Go.
As a player, 33 for 50 for 268 yards, two touchdowns, and two interceptions. He scored two touchdowns against us, a pass to Sean Nelson for 1 yard. They didn't go for that. I guess they went for two and didn't make it. And then a pass to Sean Nelson for 17 yards for a touchdown. Oh, that was an 88-play drive there. The other one was a 25-yard drive. We must have fumbled or something. But this was against the 2018, which was not good, by the way. Auburn won 27-13 in a game we led 14-0 at halftime. Second half was pretty close. But he went up against Chris Todd, who also threw for 248 yards. It's interesting. So, yeah, he had some
firsthand experience with playing quarterback in Jordan Hare.
Yeah, and doing pretty well. I mean, those are some pretty good numbers. 33 for 50. That was a passing Southern Miss team there. We were ranked number 9 at the time, but that was a bad Auburn team as the season turned out. That was early in September, second game of the year. There you go.
What I've heard about people that remember that game said it was one of those lovely September games where it's about 90% humidity and, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure. So, yeah, he's coming in as a glorified quarterback coach, right? They just had to give him offensive coordinator title, A, because we didn't have an offensive coordinator, and B, to probably justify giving him as much money as we're probably having to give him to get away from the NFL. So,
yeah, that's right.
And my understanding, too, is he's like on the fast track. Like he's, you know, people are saying he'll be a head coach sooner rather than later, and this gives him a chance to be an offensive coordinator in the SEC. So,
yeah. Again, guy's 30. Okay. Yes. He's very young. So he's got some time to develop. One of the things that makes me feel good about it is, you know, the Seattle Seahawks coach is the former, again, Southern Cal coach, right? Pete Carroll. Mm-hmm. And he has a very good track record of identifying good young coaches, right? Mm-hmm. When he was at Southern Cal, he identified two good young coaches and hired them on the offensive staff. And those two coaches were Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian. Lane Kiffin and Steve Sarkisian.
Yeah.
Like he hired those two guys basically as GAs, I think, mm-hmm. and brought them onto that staff. And they ended up taking over the offense and they both done okay. So he has a good eye for this kind of talent. He really likes Austin Davis.
Yeah. We'll see. I'm sure he'll have something to do with like the game plans and scouting, mm-hmm. you know, and all that. And then he'll get the quarterback ready. And I like that he's worked with Russell Wilson because I feel like that gives a little bit of an edge to Demetrius Davis. I'm excited about Davis.
And the other thing that Russell Wilson said, like a really high compliment, I think, about Austin Davis is that he's really good at helping the game slow down for a quarterback and mm-hmm. make it easy and mm-hmm. and helping teach. And so I think that's what we need.
It's been a long time since we mm-hmm. – I can't remember when was the last time we – I mean, was it Borges was the last time we really had a – offensive coordinator that was kind of a good teacher of the game as opposed to my system.
Yeah, kind of thing. We'll see.
All right, we got Jeffrey, Master of Business Administration.
MBA.
Okay, cool.
he committed on Sunday. He actually signed on signing day, but he publicly announced it on Sunday on French national television.
Oh, man. I don't have anything prepared, so I'm sorry.
I don't know. Pepe Le Pew.
I don't have anything.
Okay, so no French national anthem. So he,
I have nothing prepared.
he's the number one JUCO player in the country, the number one JUCO defensive lineman. He's a big time defensive tackle, but an explosive guy. He can go through double teams, make plays in the backfield, make stuff happen. His nickname is Thanos.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. So, again, the guy's a French national, and his nickname is Thanos. Fans are going to love this guy, and he seems to be an engaging, entertaining young man. So, I'm and a big-time defensive lineman. So, Auburn signed the top JUCO defensive lineman, the top JUCO cornerback, and the top JUCO safety.
That's pretty good.
That'll help. Those are guys that come in right away and play. So
I found the Marseillaise. I'm ready to go storm the Bastille. And by the Bastille, I mean Bryant Denny. I said on Twitter, I said, I don't know anything about him other than he's from France, and I hope he'll guillotine the Alabama quarterback. You go up to the Alabama quarterback and say, Monsieur, you have been found guilty. We will bring the guillotine out to you now. Sacre bleu.
Chop. Say, we already got one. All right. So he continued a very, again, with his signing and public announce of his signing, Auburn moved up to 13th
yes.
in the overall team signing rankings for this year. And so I think we have to just say right now, at this moment, that Brian Harsin and his staff did a great job in recruiting and these players for this year. Again, next year is an even bigger year because those were players they could work with when they were juniors and stuff. They did a great job getting to this point. I think people really worried about how the effect the season would have on the recruiting and all that stuff. But I think one of the things that's come through again and again is the atmosphere at the Auburn-Alabama game was huge, and all these recruits felt it, and it made a difference. So if you were a fan at that game, I think you could take some credit for some of this, that you made an incredible environment where players are like, I want to play there. I want to play in that stadium. So
there's no doubt. It was special.
The we just need to get some offensive linemen is all.
Yeah.
I expected the defensive recruiting to kind of perk up because that crowd seemed to know what they're doing between Mason and Trevon Reed and our defensive backs. Oh, yeah. They do a good job. I think they're going to be fine. I was concerned about – I mean, I know we got a good quarterback. I feel like we've got a good quarterback on the roster, and we have a good quarterback coming in. So we've got at least two really promising ones after after our current
– Finley.
Finley. And who I don't have a lot of confidence in. But, you know, if he can improve and do a few things better, that'd be great. I'd love to see him succeed. But I'm just saying we've got a guy in the wings now in Davis that went like 46-2 in high school, you know. And then you got this holding my grenade guy coming in that looks like he has promise. So, you know, I mean, we've got a future there. We got some backs coming in, it looks like. So we got to get an offensive line, though, or none of it's going to matter.
That's right. No, we got, again, Auburn and every other team in college football is going to be trying to get transfer offensive linemen. There are a couple of offensive linemen that did not sign that will sign in February. We got to get a couple of those. But we got to get a couple of these transfer guys because we need them.
So good signing day. I mean, relatively speaking, it was really good in the sense of it looked to be so bad. We were 13th in the SEC there for a minute, for a long minute.
It was one of those signing days where we talk about this a lot, and we'll talk about this a lot more in depth, but that the recency bias of signing day, that Auburn closed really strong. There was a lot of positive momentum and a lot of guys that committed to Auburn in the days leading up to signing day and on signing day. So that was big.
Yeah.
It was a big difference. So
the only other thing in football news before we get to the bowl game a little bit is I just wanted to ask you your opinion about Bo Nix's legacy, how he'll be remembered, because I've seen a lot of people talking about this, and I don't want to go down too far down the rabbit hole, just some surface impressions for now. We can revisit this from time to time. We all, you know, he's going to Oregon, and we all hope he does well in his last year. He graduated from Auburn, so I don't think you can ask anything more from him. That's fine. It's his business. People are saying, well, but he threw away his chance to do whatever. I don't know where they're seeing what chance we were going to have next year. How are we going to get to the national championship game next year with this team that didn't even have a winning season so far this year?
No, I mean, I felt like Oregon had they had this quarterback from Boston College who was primarily a runner and not a good passer at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, like a really bad passer. And that really held them back this year. And so I think if you add Bo Nix to that team, that's a team that could have made the playoff maybe. Yeah. I'm going to be honest. They beat Ohio State, and they lost to Utah, but they lost to Utah because Utah stopped the run, and Oregon couldn't throw the ball. Okay, so if Oregon could throw the ball, those games are a little different. So it is big. They brought in Kenny Dillingham, the former Auburn OC. He was at Florida State last year, and he's going to be offensive coordinator, quarterback coach. So I think that's interesting. I think Bo Nix is going to go out there and do well. I think it's going to be good for him. I think he's been through a lot of tough games and a lot of tough situations. And his legacy is a guy who came in with high expectations, maybe unrealistic expectations based on the recruiting hype and was
based
thrown
on his
into,
supporting cast to me.
Yes. But a guy who, but he wasn't ready, and he was thrown into the fire to be the quarterback of that 2019 team. When if we'd had a veteran quarterback and he could have sat on the bench for a year, he would have been in a better place and wouldn't have been in those situations to have to play at Florida or at LSU. So I think, again, Bo Nix gave everything he had for Auburn for 3 years. And the only thing in my mind people are going to hold against him is the hype and the expectations.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about this. I think some of what held him back was the kind of the Gus passing game and the quarterback coaching around that. I think he got better this year. I think he developed under Bobo and stuff. But I don't blame him for wanting to go do something else to get away from it. Because people are like, oh, they're mad at him for leaving. But I think people gave him a lot of crud when he didn't play great. So.
Well, the other side of it, though, and I agree with everything you just said, but the other side of it, though, is that there are people that are like, he's going to be, in 5 years, he's going to be remembered like Nick Marshall or something. And I'm like, he's a cool guy and he's a legacy and all, but I'm like, right now, I don't rank him ahead of his dad.
No.
Because he had the one game against Alabama, which is an all-timer, fantastic, but his dad had two or three games like that. And he had the opening game against Oregon, and that was great. But, you know, Pat went down to Florida and beat number one Florida in the swamp. Yeah. So,
no, and he went down to Baton Rouge and made plays to win that game, right?
Yeah.
So, I give him credit for that.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not like, you know, I would put him somewhere in the mix with like, Cox and his dad.
That's upset. So, in the Auburn quarterback ranking, like, I would say he's in the, you know, if you go 1 to 10, he's in the second five.
For sure. Oh, yeah. So. And again, it doesn't take anything away from it. I'm not out to get him or anything. I'm just trying to be honest in appraising his resume.
And we're too close to it right now for people to be objective. I think people can't do that. But I think he was, again, young and thrown into some really, really tough situations where he was asked to do too much against on the road against good defenses. So that's what I think.
That's it. And just never really had a team around him that I think they thought it but they did. Bowl game thoughts. We've got some people sitting out.
Yeah. Roger McCreary, Jacoby McClain, and I think Bradarius Ham are all sitting out.
For what purpose? To go pro or to?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Prepare for the NFL draft.
All right.
So. And then we know Bo Nix is gone. Supposedly Finley's fine. He's practicing. Demetrius Davis practicing as a second team quarterback.
That's interesting. I'd like to see some of him, but we'll see how the game
goes. I think everybody would. It's a bowl game. Put him out there. Let's see what we got.
Give him the third quarter or something. Yeah.
So we talked about this before, like how good is Houston actually? They played in the championship game of the AAC, against Cincinnati. But Cincinnati beat them, and we talked about how Houston only played a few other good teams during the year. They only played one, Power Five team, Texas Tech, and they lost. And Texas Tech is a, kind of a 6-6 Big 12 team. All right, Cincinnati beat them pretty solidly, and then the only other really good team they played was SMU, and they beat SMU, and SMU is a good team, right?
Yeah,
a good solid bowl team. But I think. When you look at the stats for Houston, they played three good teams, Cincinnati, Texas Tech, and SMU, and they played eight terrible teams, right? So I think there's a real difference when you look at those stats and what happened in the three games against good teams and the eight teams against bad teams. And so I think when you look at the raw stats for Houston, they look really good. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, man, this team is some. And again, they're a good team. They hung with Cincinnati for a while and gave them a game. So I'm not saying they're bad, but what I'm saying is, like, here's an example. But they ran the ball really well against the bad team. They averaged like 4.5 yards a carry and 162 yards a game against the nine bad teams they played, right? Okay. And against the good teams, they averaged 2 yards a carry and 80 yards a game.
Wow.
So that's the kind of thing I'm talking. And it's the same kind of with the stopping the run is similar, right? The really good teams, like Texas Tech averaged 5 yards a carry against them, right? Mm. So I think it's Cincinnati had 210 yards and averaged 7 yards a carry against them. So I think some of it is the teams they played. And like SMU is a, you know, wide open passing kind of team. They're not going to try and they're not really good at running the ball. But I think Auburn can line up and run the ball on this team and stop the run. And I think that's going to be different. Now, Houston has a really good offense. They have a very good quarterback named Clayton Toon. And they have a wide receiver who's really good named Nathaniel Dell, whose nickname is Tank. So they call him Tank Dell. So there's going to be a tank on both sides.
His name should be Computer or something.
PC.
So he used to have a player named McIntosh, so it'd be kind of cool to have McIntosh against Dell.
So he's very productive. They go to him, like, again, he has 80 catches. The next best guy is 34. They throw to him all the time. Okay. So that's a guy that, again, without McCreary playing, somebody else is going to have to focus on that guy and pick him up and you know, take him out of the game.
That would have been an interesting assignment for McCreary, so that's too bad.
Yeah.
Because he really did shut down for most of the game, Michi.
Yeah, Michi.
So, all right, so are we going to be able to do anything to them when we have the ball?
Yeah, again, like I was saying, I think we can run the ball on them. I think we can line up with Tank and Jarquez and run the ball.
That'd be once since the beginning of the year.
I agree. I agree 100%, but I think we can do it. I think with the, you know, some time off for bowl practice and the time to work on stuff, I think we can line up and run the ball in there.
Harris is going to come out in the wishbone. That would be so cool.
Put
Pegues at fullback and Tank and Jarquez at halfback and halfback.
Just no receivers, just all tight ends.
Oh,
just,
man.
Just line up and run the ball
in there. That guy's not rolling over in his grave. He's applauding in his grave.
That's it. So I think that's the foundation. Is that I watched a couple of their Houston games, and I think Auburn can run the ball against them. I think in particular on the edge, right? I think Auburn can run the ball outside of the tackles on the edge and also kind of throw the ball out there, those little swing passes to the running backs or the tight ends and stuff right off the edge of the line. And I think we can – Houston seems to have some weaknesses there. I think we can take advantage of and get some plays. The big question I want to ask you, and you never know in these games, is Auburn going to be motivated to be there? Because if Auburn is motivated, they can win this game and push Houston around and take control. And if they're just like, la, 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 bowl game, whatever, then we're going to have a problem. Because Houston is competent.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't know because it seemed like everything about our bowl game experience the last 8 years has been so Gus-centric, right? I mean, we just lost every bowl game but two. But this is the one that Gus was able to come out and get him to play really well and beat Memphis and get that seventh. And this is an important win because we haven't had a losing season since 2012.
That's right.
And this would help keep that streak going if we can win this game. So
amen.
I really want to win this one. I mean, you know, when you've got like 9 wins, you'd really like to have 10. If you got 10, you'd like to have 11. If you got 8, you'd like to have 9. But we really want to avoid 6 and 7 for this year.
Amen.
Is this a more winnable game than the 4 we dropped at the end of the season?
Sure. Yes. I mean, Houston is, again, it is a relatively even matchup, right? Yeah. They're in the same ballpark as good as us, right? But they're not as – I mean, they're not on the same plan as good as Alabama, right? So – or Texas A&M. They're not on the same planet with those teams. Nope. So it's a different – you know.
South Carolina.
They're probably on the same planet with South Carolina.
Kind of forget that one. Okay. special teams. Anything we know about their special teams or ours at this point?
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see in this game, right? They're not great on special teams. I think they've had some problems in that area. They have a real good kicker, but not great in some other areas. I think that's an area where hopefully Auburn can make some plays or at least not shoot. My goal is not shoot ourselves in the foot special teams about that.
Well, you know, this is going to kind of be a home game. So I'm hoping that if they're not that motivated, maybe there'll be a big orange blue crowd that can motivate them and get them to.
Yeah.
Perform. Yeah, there. By the way, there was a pretty good Auburn crowd at the SLU game.
I saw. We heard them. Believe me, at the end of that game.
You heard us.
We heard you. We heard you. But I do think the crowd will matter. It's in that nice new UAB stadium. And I do think it'll matter. And I think it'll matter that, like, some of these – the players who are, you know, going to focus on the NFL are already gone. The players who are there are focused on next season. And they want to make a good game to show the coaches, I should get more playing time next year. I should, you know, I should be in a somebody that you're really, you know, focusing on in the depth chart and building game plans around stuff. And they want to go out there and make plays. And there's opportunity for some young guys to step up at some of these positions where these veteran guys were. So that'll be interesting to watch.
All right. So the bowl pick'em is underway.
It's underway. How's that going for you, Van?
Oh, boy. Well, I did win today. I picked the Tulsa over Old Dominion.
You picked game. The Golden Hurricane.
I did. And so I am no longer in sole possession of last place. Boris the AU Tiger is playing because he is a patron. So my wife had to point out to me that not only was I in last place, I was losing to a stuffed animal and continue to be. That's not where you want to be in life, losing to a stuffed animal.
It's not great, Van.
No.
Okay, now, it's not great.
Boris takes issue with the whole you're a stuffed animal thing because he's
right. So just for awareness, like the top teams in our bracket, I'm going to throw some Mark Sandy, Preston Settle, Danny Flack, Auburn Elvis,
yep.
All 7-3. Okay, there is a huge group of 6-4. I'm in the big middle pile at 5-5. So it's again, we got a long way to go.
I'm 3-7. I was 2-7 before today.
All right.
But I have to point out, there have been a lot of upsets so far.
Yeah.
That'd been a lot of – if you went through and just picked the favorites, you'd be doing good to be 5-5 right now. There have been lot of upsets.
There have. So quick credit to the teams in front, and we'll give you an update on this next week. And look forward to seeing how we do and seeing if – hopefully I can make a bit of a comeback.
Well, you're better off than I am at doing that. But it's still early days. We'll see. But is the kind of thing you get to do, among many type of things, as a patron. So if you would like to be in on it, you could. I don't know if you can still jump in. Probably on the games that haven't started yet, you can.
You can. You can pick the games. If you're a patron, you could join and pick the games that have not been played.
Because you're not that far behind right now. Like I said, there's been a lot of.
You could still beat Van and I with some good picking. I'm just
that's
saying.
Right. You could absolutely. Go to www.auwishbone.com and hit the big orange button to become a patron. And I also, you know, as we always do, thank you all of our patrons on every episode. And you get other things like we have the March Madness brackets that we'll be doing a little bit later on, early in March, obviously. So in April, so lots going on, always fun. We just had our Fantasy Formula One patrons only league that just finished up. So there's always something. I did a lot better than that to do at basketball, that's for dang sure. So we want to just go ahead and quickly thank our patrons and say if you want to be part of their ranks, go to www.auwishbone.com. We have to thank, you know what? I have to push the actual button here, don't I? There we go. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Dr. Crackham, Patrick Hayes, Allison Rich, Bradley Blackman. By the way, I believe Allison is one of our Babylon 5 review show supporters, and I'm making a new Patreon just for that show. So some of the folks that are here now we'll be migrating probably over to that one just so I don't have to read 100 and whatever names on the Babylon 5 show every week. I'm sure those people get kind of tired of it. Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ben Bloodworth, Brian's Not Harsin' Around, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, Bobby, for the love of Pete, please don't lose the bowl game. Man, I hear you there, Joel. George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Ole Miss's Miracle Medical Staff, Algorithm, Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Hammett, His Arms Wide, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary, plus Valiant Hermes, Virginia Double Dribble, way to go, Rusty, I appreciate that. WDE Richie, I think we have a question about that. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Brandon the Smith, Buddy is a much better elf than Saban, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, check out the nonprofit drybutts.com. Diapers save lives. Okay. Krista Hilton, Colby Butler, Corey Smyre. Krista Hilton, I appreciated Chris getting along with the program there, but the names have kind of shuffled around a little bit the last couple of weeks, so he's no longer in with the other V's, so I apologize. Maybe I'll reorganize them myself just to keep all the V's together because that was fun. Colby Butler, Corey Smyre, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Diabama, EJ Alexander, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Heather and Yancey Steingrabber, Helping Van Upgrade His Insulation, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, listen to hellbentatl.com, and
smoke weed every day.
I love it. Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, that woke John up, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Saban Needs a New Toupee, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston. This is the year Thomas Jinxo Jordan has improved so much under this new offense. He's focused. He's having fun. I don't know who Thomas Jinxo Jordan is. Is that TJ Finley? I guess that's TJ Finley. Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87. I was listening to Weagle in 87. After the Iron Bowl, I ate some bugs. I ate some grass. I used my hands to wipe my tears. Alex Nguyen. Alex Quirard says, War Eagle Brian Pittman is my best friend. I think I saw Brian at the basketball game. I think that was Brian Pittman that came up. Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Hanshew, Ben Rigas, Brian Albanese. I'm probably wrong and just like offended two people, and I apologize. But I think that's who it was. C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, David Smiley. Did Van ever find out what a Billiken is? Yes, it's like a little Buddha-style good luck charm that somebody in Kansas City or somewhere in Missouri used to make, and they made that their mascot, and I don't know why, and you just have to go with it, but it was really strange. I decided it was basically an albino version of the Green Goblin. That was my impression. I was waiting for the thing to throw a pumpkin bomb at somebody. Elizabeth Donald, got to get better at celebrating.
Yeah, we got to get better at celebrating.
Ice cream clone with a Boba Fett head. I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Alric, Jeremiah Schumann, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Michael Halbrook, Michael O'Connor, MVP Captivating Kathy Bright. My favorite Star Wars movie of all time is the Star Wars Holiday Special, Happy Life Day, Bob Sammons, Help Me Confess. Okay, I don't have a problem with that because the Star Wars Holiday Special was what introduced the world for the very first time to what I'm wearing on my hoodie right now. What am I wearing on my hoodie right now, John?
Boba Fett.
Boba Fett. He was in the Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978, 2 years before The Empire Strikes Back. But it was an animated thing, so it's kind of weird. Paul Bankson, Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Sarah Browns, Spanky Big Boutte, John and Van and Monkey Boys, Stephen Thompson, the Albie Strangling Big Al ornament. I love it. It's on my tree right now. Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com. Again, I always try to make that fun and not like a horrible, painful stretch of time, but it will shrink down a little bit because I'm going to do separate new Patreons just for the Babylon 5 show, which will probably take a dozen of those folks over, and for the new Avengers show. So off we go. We have a Guess the Game, a special guest Guess the Game. Are you ready?
I'm ready. And again, we want to thank Jared earning some well-earned time away, and I thank our special guest, Johnny Dent.
Johnny Dent.
For Jared. Volunteered to step in knowing that Jared's going to be off, so we look forward to this.
Yeah, very excited to have a whole... I haven't listened to it because I have to hear it fresh, so hopefully he's trustworthy as Jared has been, and never thought I'd say that. So mean to Jared. I love Jared so much. I'm just kidding. By the way, I have to say, we don't do ads, so if you really want to keep our show going, do become a patron because that's what we do instead of ads. We've turned down another 2 or 3 ad opportunities in the last 2 weeks. We keep getting emails from people saying, we want to advertise on your podcast. And I always write back and say, I'm sorry, but we promise our patrons, that's our business model, that you will not have to listen to ads if we have patrons. And so, www.auwishbone.com. All right, let's get Johnny Dent's installment of Guess the Game. Here we go.
Guess this game.
Tell you what, the crowd today, Dave, has they came out to play as much as this football team. They've been a big factor about Auburn's performance.
Absolutely, Dave. They've been a huge factor. They've been screaming, yelling. We talked about the noise element in here. I'll tell you, this place is rocking. Rain didn't keep anybody away.
It's third down and seven. Has yet to enter the Auburn red zone today. They're knocking on the door. They came in first in the conference in red zone scoring at 88%, and here's an all-out blitz. Backpedaling, fires, picked off by his second of the game, the former wideout, on his way and tripped up at the 20-yard line. Oh, my!
All right, I got a couple of clues there. And by the way, I love how his entire
it's different.
But I love how his entire vocal was guess the game. That was classic. Because Jared usually has like quite a bit to introduce. Yeah,
he does an outro spiel. All right. So the wide out turned defensive back making the interception. What was your other clue? The rain?
It sounded not like CBS, but like
the 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
All right, that and another team that was good at scoring, who we were holding, we were shutting them down, and Igbinoghene had an interception and ran it back.
Was it? Okay, there's two options, I think. Well, no, there's okay. Three. There's three options. There's Iggy, there's Trevon Reed, mm-hmm. And if you go back a little further, there's the one that ended up being the Florida defensive coordinator with Boom,
give me a second.
I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
He was a receiver, and then he switched over to defensive back and was really good at defensive back.
He did.
All right, so we got. I don't think it's Trevon Reed. That seems like
the least
likely.
Very timely if it was, but I don't think so.
Yeah. How far back was that game?
I don't know. It seemed older, didn't it?
No. Yeah, it kind of did.
All right, it kind of seemed older.
It was raining. Was that?
I don't think it was the West Virginia game.
What was another big rainy game? I can't remember, honestly.
It rains a lot.
And a team that scores a lot in their a team that scores. They were leading the conference in 88% red zone scoring.
What about? I know we've done this game before, but did Noah play? What years was he at Auburn?
It was like, right, what was it, like 17, 16, 15, something like that.
Okay.
15, 16, 17, maybe 18. It was like the middle to later Gus period, I think. I can't think of an 11 o'clock rainy game where we were like totally defensively dominating some team and intercepted in the red zone and ran all the way back to the other 20-yard line. That just doesn't ring a bell for me, other than the 11 o'clock time slot of death bell. I mean, those are some really good clues, but they're just not,
The other thing is he said, when he talked about the offensive stats, he said the conference, not their conference or the name of their conference. He said the conference.
Which
made me think it was an SEC team.
Makes me
think. Right, not a non-conference team.
No, yeah, even though we're playing them at 11 o'clock, so it's not Alabama. Probably not Georgia if we're playing them at 11 o'clock.
But could have been Ole Miss or LSU.
Could have been.
Could have been Tennessee or
It could have been a Hugh Freeze Ole Miss.
Yep, very much. Maybe was there a Hugh Freeze Ole Miss game during that time?
It could have been a Bobby Petrino Arkansas. I'm just trying to think of SEC teams that we would be playing at 11 o'clock that could be leading the conference in offense.
I don't know if, he was there in 2010. I don't know if he was there long enough for us to play him multiple times in
Auburn. Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
Let's just go to the hint file. I think we're floundering here.
We are. We've given it our good faith effort, our due diligence. Let's go to the hint file.
Now it's got names.
But I tell you what, the crowd today, Dave, they came out to play as much as this football team. They've been a big factor about Auburn's performance.
Absolutely, Dave. They've been a huge factor. They've been screaming, yelling. We talked about the noise element in here. I tell you, this place is rocking. Rain didn't keep anybody away.
It's third down. Seven. LSU has yet to enter the Auburn red zone today. They're knocking on the door. They came in first in the conference in red zone scoring at 88%, and here's an all-out blitz. Randall backpedaling, fires, picked off by Carlos Dansby, his second of the game, the former wideout, on his way and trips off at the 20-yard line.
Would not have. Wow, none of that would have occurred to me. LSU, Carlos Dansby. By the way, I've got to applaud, is it Johnny Dent?
Johnny Dent.
I got to applaud Johnny Dent for his succinct, pithy comment. Now it's got names. That was awesome. That's right.
Summary keeps it simple. Right?
Keep it simple. so Dansby was there 2001, 2002, 2003. It's got to be 2002 LSU. Now, I was there, and I don't remember it raining. My sister and I were there.
But
I
don't, it rained early.
Yeah. You know. But, I mean, 01 and 03. 01, we lost in Baton Rouge in that game that was like the de facto West Championship because of 9/11. Yeah. 03, they murdered us in Baton Rouge. But 2002 is the one where...
Dansby was gone in 04.
Yes.
So it's got to be 02.
02 is the year we beat the snot out of them in Auburn. I just don't remember it raining. But it's got to be 2002. So let's go ahead and...
It was 2002 LSU. Don't worry. Jared will be back.
All right. A strong applause for Johnny Dent. Great job.
Please
clap. That was awesome.
That was really
good. And a good pick as a game because that was tough.
Yeah,
that
was a good one. I was at that game and couldn't figure it out. And I, you know what? I do remember it was a day game, though. I remember that it was like bright sunlight the whole game. So it was like an earlier, probably Jefferson Pilot or something, which is surprising because they were good and we were good that year. I don't know why it would be earlier in the day. That's or like on Jefferson Pilot or whatever, but there you go. So, all right. Well, good job, Mr. Dent. We appreciate that. It was really, really, really good. And now, and we're looking forward to Jared returning. And
thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What we got?
All right. First question is from Doc Crackham, who says, regarding my last listener question, Brian Harsin has officially brought a trickling hose to the dumpster fire. Finishing strong and recruiting his first year, check. Chafing the narrative to compete with the upper echelon of the SEC, check. Now the reason it's not full bore fire hose swinging all over the place is the offensive line still a major concern, even for the bowl game. Austin Davis is still an unknown entity without any recruiting experience, and we don't know how well he will be starting at a position where the player that touches the ball in every play. My question here is, where do you think other college fans see the state of Auburn football at the end of this first season? I read an article mid-season saying Harsin was the best in terms of record hire, but 6-6 definitely doesn't seem that impressive, especially ending with a four-game losing streak where the offense and defense, cue Mississippi State game, looked inept, War Eagle as always.
Now, that's fair enough. I mean, we don't know a lot of stuff, and we don't know how he's going to be as far as a recruiter and everything. Although I do think that when you're able to – it seems like being able to sell an assistant as NFL guy, NFL guy always seems to work well, particularly on offense.
That's right.
It seems like it.
Again, our defensive line coach, Nick Eason, is doing a great job recruiting. I think he's a young guy who has direct NFL experience that says, I can show you how to get to the league, and recruits are reacting to that. And I think Austin Davis can do the same thing. So I think that's a good thing. It is fair. Again, teams change coaches because they're bad, right? And there's a lot of turnover when teams change coaches, and it really impacts recruiting and that kind of stuff. So I think Harsin has probably done the best job of any first-year coach of any new program that took over in the last year. And there's a lot of other teams changing head coaches this year, so I think it'll be interesting to see the development of, you know, Auburn versus some of these teams that changed coaches at the same time we did or changed, you know, this year. So, I get it. The reasons are valid, and the offensive line recruiting is very fair. I said earlier that we got to give Harsin and his staff positive credit, right?
Mm-hmm.
We signed one offensive lineman.
Yeah.
We are going to lose several offensive linemen because they played there last year.
That's right.
We've already had one backup transfer away. Tayshaun Manning transferred to Kentucky. So we're going to need, and we have some guys back there, but we're going to need, you know, three or four at minimum more offensive linemen between now and spring practice to in signing day or transfer portal. They got to go out and get those guys. And we need the offensive, the guys that are stepping in next year to be better than the guys were this year. And that's a big, big unknown. So
I know that. That's right.
All right. Our next question is from Samuel Salvatore. He says, hello, guys of War Eagle. Van, this question is for you.
Okay.
How does it feel to actually be at an Auburn game and they win for once?
Hey, I've been saying.
Shots fired.
I've been saying that people are going to start saying that when you and I or I go to the Auburn game, we lose. And I've been saying.
Dispel once and for all with this fiction.
Right, because we needed to show that me being there can result in a big win. And my wife said, so maybe it's John. Oh, no.
Oh, ouch.
But we were at the
picture around the stadium.
I know. We were at the Purdue Bowl game, too. So I've seen us win a few things, not just all losses. Although
so
we did pick the wrong road game to go to. I'll admit that.
You and me together, not win.
Yeah.
Okay.
In retrospect, we should have gone to the LSU game, but we didn't know that.
All right. He says, also, Van, what is your ranking of the bad basketball ref moments in history? This game or the Final Four Virginia double dribble?
Yeah. This game had a lot more really questionable and bad calls. That one just had the more consequential ones. So, but this was riddled with ridiculousness.
It was, but I got to be honest, I felt like this was standard basketball, college basketball home cooking.
Yeah.
And Auburn overcame it. The other team got away with a ton, and you can't be standing around looking at the ref going, he hit me. You got to keep playing. And I think that once Auburn got to that place, they were okay.
Yeah, the Auburn players looking at the ref like, why are you calling fouls on us but not on SLU? And SLU is like,
you sit at my table.
Well, there it is. The home cooking.
That's it.
I can find a way to fit those into any conversation.
It's truth. All right. And he asked about Bo Nix being a duck. I feel like we've covered that. Is there anything you want to say there?
No, that's good.
All right. And then our last question is from Jacob Fleming, who asked about the quarterback depth chart for 2022. He says, friends, hope you guys are well. Who do you see emerging as the starting quarterback for Auburn in 2022? Is this person on the team yet? But that's the first part of the question.
I don't see how people can keep putting DD, Demetrius Davis, off and then turn around and say, oh, when holding the hand grenade comes in, he's going to be number one, like Bo Nix all over again. I mean, I feel like if that happens, Davis is hitting the transfer portal. And I wouldn't blame him a bit because he's waited around and done his part, you know, done his duty to work his way up. And now you're going to bring in a guy that's good. I mean, if he's better, fine. I just don't know how people can predict, as they seem to be, that this new guy is going to be better than what we have when we haven't even seen what we have play yet.
Yeah. Again, they're going to play whoever is the best, whoever gives Auburn the best chance to win. And we don't know who that is right now. But I think – so it's going to be a four-horse race, I think, right?
Yeah.
It's to Davis – it's Holden Grenier, it's TJ Finley, and it's some quarterback who transfers in. We don't know who that's going to be, and it depends on what level that person is and how much talent they have and experience and that kind of stuff. I agree with you.
There you go.
I agree with you that I think Davis has an experience edge on Holden Grenier. Again, the difference is this coaching staff went out and got Holden. Mm-hmm. They wanted him, but also right. He's a true freshman, and I think they're not going to rush him out there if he's not ready. And I think you're right. Davis has experience. He's been on campus. He's been working with him. They have confidence in him. And I just feel like he's got to have a higher upside than TJ Finley. I haven't watched enough TJ Finley at this point. We'll see in the bowl game. Maybe it changes their mind, but I'm with you. I would like to see what Davis could do next year. But I look at it going to spring practice as kind of a four-way competition, and then they'll try to narrow it down to like two going into fall practice.
If Davis is anywhere near as accurate as Finley, and that's not a huge hurdle to jump, then you got to think Davis has the advantage because he's mobile. Yeah. He's like a Damian Craig.
Yeah. I agree. All right. And then he says, again, how do you think the Bo Nix Oregon experiment will play out? Shaky QB play has hurt Oregon down the stretch the past two seasons. Yesterday, the Athletic Stuart Mandel compared Nix's stats in the past 3 years to current Oregon QB Anthony Brown, or Brown has been more accurate. I'm not 100% sold this is the best fit for both parties. However, I do wish him nothing but the best and will root for Oregon opens the season with Georgia.
I know.
Next year. So we'll root for Oregon to beat Georgia next season. I wish you guys and everyone listening a very happy holiday and a great new year. War damn Eagle, Jacob Flint.
Oh, Jacob is always so great. He's the nicest guy ever. Here is Bo Nix walking in to the Oregon complex. Yes, yes, I am here. Hello, hello. And then he sees the schedule and who he opens with. Wait, what? We open with who? Oregon? Did I say Oregon? I was trying to say Oregon State. Wait, is this not Oregon State? I'm sorry, everybody. I'm in the wrong building. I have to go now. Georgia. Oh, by the way, John, this button right above that reminds me, we got the word. I don't know if who got the word when, but my wife just told me a little bit earlier, a second season is coming soon for... Just two little country kids outside Miss Bailey. Can't wait. That's the Gemstones on HBO. Can't wait.
I'm going to make another comparison here.
Okay.
Between Bo Nix and another quarterback who struggled and went somewhere else.
Ooh.
I would compare Bo Nix to Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts struggled at – he won games and he played well, but he was kind of thrown in sometimes at Alabama, and he wasn't accurate enough, and it caused problems. He ran a little too much, and then he transferred to Oklahoma – got different coaching, got better with his accuracy, and that allowed him to develop the NFL. This is the analogy in my mind that I've been kind of thinking around with, and I just looked, and actually the stats from 2017 Jalen Hurts and this year Bo Nix are pretty comparable.
Wow.
They're in the same ballpark.
Wow.
So I think it's an interesting analogy.
That is. That's really – I wouldn't have thought of that in a million years, but you're exactly right. Yeah. And I feel like that's when Nick Saban said, I don't want my quarterback to have to transfer away, learn how to pass. And that's right after he left that they got this huge passing game.
They changed the offense, right?
They sure did.
So.
Yeah. All right. I guess we want to take a quick trip, like a QT.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
And I got to admit, I'm looking forward to more Gemstones because that's a funny, funny show. Same guy that did Eastbound and Down and Vice Principals and all that. Really good stuff on HBO. All right, coming up, we got some bowl games we didn't get to talk about last time. Of course, on New Year's Eve, Georgia, Michigan, and Alabama, Cincinnati. Man, Michigan, you know what you got to do. Cincinnati, you know what you got to do. Get the job done. You have any thoughts on those?
Just that I think Michigan is really good on both lines of scrimmage.
Yeah.
They're really good on the offensive line, defensive line, and I think that's going to allow them to hold up. I don't know whether they can make plays against Georgia's defense, but I also think that can slow down Georgia.
I think it's going to be a low-scoring game.
Yeah.
This looks like a 20-17 game to me.
Yep, I agree. I think Michigan has a real chance.
Alabama-Cincinnati, is this like the biggest upset of all time, or is Cincinnati going to be a speed bump after all they did to get in? Is it just they're happy to be there?
I think they'll hang around.
I hope so. Man, if they could win, that would be sweet. All right, so in the SEC, we've got Missouri Army and the Armed Forces Bowl. That seems kind of like a home field advantage for Army, but it's like when Florida plays in the Gator Bowl. But
Missouri, they pick like Army against a team with a bad run defense. So
I picked Missouri just because SEC and they're not terrible. But are you telling me Army's going to run roughshod all over Missouri?
I think so. Again, it could be one of those high-scoring games where Army runs all over them and Missouri passes all over them.
Yeah. I tell you what, the Army-Navy game sure was good this year. I know it wasn't for you. December 23rd, the Gasparilla Bowl, which sounds like something you'd have to get some kind of medication for. Central Florida versus Florida. This is intriguing. Who has Florida got now? The guy from Louisiana or whatever? Or
Billy Napier. I don't think he's coaching the bowl game.
Okay. So who's coaching for Florida?
Interim coaching staff.
Galen Hall. Galen Hall coming back.
stepping out of retirement. Again, because they fired Grantham and one of the other assistants earlier, and then they fired Mullen. I think it's the Mullen assistants are carrying him through.
Wow, man. So I'm Florida should win it just because Central Florida, they've had some injury issues. And,
yeah, but,
oh, and their quarterback's transferring away.
Yeah, Dylan Gabriel transferred away. But they, again, Central Florida doesn't ever get this shot. So they are going to be fired up as all. And I think Florida's going to be like, we don't care.
Yep.
We don't want to be here.
Yeah, I picked Central Florida. Actually, no, I think Florida, but I'm going to change it. December 28th, Liberty Bowl, your favorite bowl, Mississippi State versus Texas Tech. Man, this is not only the, hey, you still owe me money bowl. Now I think about it, this could be some fireworks.
Yeah. Yeah. But Mississippi State, you know, Texas Tech is not that kind of team anymore.
Yeah.
They're more of a defense. The Big 12's evolving, and they are too. So, but I think Mississippi State's better. Yeah. But it'll be, you know, does Leach want to try to prove some point here or whatever?
It's just odd. December 30th, the Duke's Mayo Bowl, North Carolina versus South Carolina, the Civil War of Carolinas for all the mayonnaise. You got to think North Carolina is going to be favored heavily, but has South Carolina got any chance at all?
North Carolina's offensive line sucks. That's the chance. South Carolina has a decent SEC.
I'm glad I can't imagine
line.
What that's like. Oh, wait.
They could go in there and chew them up, and that's the recipe.
Maybe South Carolina will run the same offensive play in the second half against them every play and eat them up. That'd be great. You've also got the Music City Bowl where apparently Purdue has a permanent guest spot. It's the Purdue Music City Bowl this year featuring Tennessee in kind of a home away from home game. So I feel like Tennessee should be able to handle that.
Tennessee's way better than Purdue. If they lose this game, it's because Tennessee was sleepwalking.
Yeah. That's the game I always want Auburn to go to if we don't get to go to a big bowl, because it's a four-hour trip for us and everything else is like 9 hours at minimum. Let's see. New Year's Eve before the big games, you've got the Gator Bowl. They still have the Gator Bowl. Interesting. Where's the Bluebonnet Bowl? Texas A&M versus Wake Forest. Texas A&M Wake Forest just sounds – that doesn't sound like a good thing for Wake Forest.
It's a matchup of schools with like a giant, like whatever, 50,000 student enrollment versus 4,000 student enrollment. So if it was just the students, it would be a problem with Wake Forest. Again,
Wake Forest is a small arboretum on the College Station campus.
Yeah, I was going to say they're a campus within the campus. I just think I can't. I mean, Wake Forest offense is good. They have a good quarterback. They do this thing that kind of
You've described this before.
The RPO play where they do the fake handoff to the running back, and then they stand there and they walk toward the line of scrimmage and wait for the, you know, the safeties to leave the wide receivers or tight ends, whatever, and then he throws it. And I'm not – you should watch this game because it'll give you a heart attack.
I got to go back
on YouTube.
Texas A&M
defensive lineman bear down on that guy.
Oh, God. It's going to be ugly. Wake Forest sounded intriguing, and they were winning early. But when they actually had to play some tough teams toward the end of the season, they started losing. And so I just feel like A&M's going to expose them completely.
Oh, A&M is so much better than them, like talent-wise, 1-85.
Who thought this was a good matchup?
ESPN. Understand.
Yeah. Well, they're wrong. New Year's Day, the Outback Bowl, Arkansas-Penn State. That could be interesting. I think Arkansas should win that one. Citrus Bowl, Iowa-Kentucky. Oh, Iowa falls apart if you breathe on them heavy, so Kentucky's going to rock and roll. Don't you think?
This game's going to be like 10-9 or 12-9 or something. I'm just saying. Like, if you like offense, this is not the save it for the next game.
Baylor, Ole Miss, and the Sugar.
Again, this would be fun. Dave Aranda, has done a really good job at Baylor. They are good on both sides of the ball, and Ole Miss want to go in there and Wayne will put some fireworks up. But I think Baylor's a really good team, so this will be a good game.
And then finally, on January 4th, the Texas Bowl, which does not actually include a Texas team, interestingly enough, Kansas State versus LSU. How does LSU end up playing on January 4th? That's weird.
Because this is a really low-level bowl, and I think they were,
Kansas State-LSU is an interesting matchup most years, but not so much.
It is. We'll see. This is all about, like, does LSU care? Do they want to be there?
Does anybody care to watch it?
Yeah, exactly.
So, All right. We've gotten to the end of our agenda and the end of the show. Any last thoughts?
All right. So we are not recording on next Monday because it's the evening before the bowl game.
Right.
We are going to try and do a live recording during the bowl game, like at halftime or something. And so the next time you hear from us in a regular show will be, the next week, the week after the bowl.
Yeah, there we go. So holiday break / bowl game break, but we're still doing stuff for you because we love you and because it'll be fun for us too. And then look for our next regular show in the beginning of January, I guess. All right. Well, we've given you I'm going to be editing some things out. We had some technical difficulties that you folks hopefully didn't hear because hopefully I remember to remove them when I edit this later tonight. But we've given you almost an hour and a half of fine entertainment. So we hope you guys have a really Merry Christmas. I hope you all get a nice shiny copy of We Believed in your stockings from Santa or your best Auburn.
Not too late to order it on Amazon for Christmas delivery.
It is not too late. Hop, it probably is, but don't listen to us. But yeah.
You could pay the $800 overnight delivery fee.
It's worth it. It's worth, especially since I haven't ported it to Kindle yet. So if you want to read it, you got to get the book. I guess at some point I got to put it on Kindle. All right, John, I think that's good for tonight. I hope you have a Merry Christmas and you and yours and everybody. And we will see you in a few days for the bowl game. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.